Few nations have been so poor as to have but one god. Gods were made so easily, and the raw materials cost so little, that generally the god market was fairly glutted and heaven crammed with these phantoms. Robert Greene Ingersoll.
Inconceivable!
Will you please act like you have more than a two-word vocabulary?
Is there air? You don't know!
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Hey, don't touch that dial. You found Secular Yakking.
I'm Robert.
And I'm Amy.
After years.
Many years of yakking at each other.
We're here to yak at you.
So sit back and enjoy the yakking.
Hey, welcome back, everybody.
This is the part where you talk.
You do that every week.
Well, I'm waiting.
You're just impatient.
Well, you need to talk.
You could talk.
That's the whole point of the show. I actually was about to, too.
Oh, one of these
I was sitting there staring at you. I'm like, wonder if he's going to talk.
One of these weeks, I'll just see what happens.
I know you will. Anyways,
that's my word.
No, it's mine.
Okay. We have Twitters.
Yes, we have several, actually.
Yeah, we have quite a bit this week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. People like us this week.
Okay.
All right. So we got SEC, which is actually Secular Scarlet, if you'll remember when we were part of the Secular Outreach Network.
Mm-hmm.
She was part of that network.
Uh-huh. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm boring already. Got it.
I can't help it. I think I'm allergic to podcasting. I yawn every time we go to do this.
Of course. Then we've got Now That I'm Older. Mark, James, Drift and Ramble Podcast, Believe Me Boy, Andra the Atheist, Carrot Illustrations, Paul Tomowazowski.
Ah.
Like Mike Wazowski. I don't think I got that right, but I'm close.
So apologies.
Monkey Chips, Real Chronicles, Real Talk Incorporated, Derek R. Audette, The Boondoggle, and Sarah Odegaard.
And apologies to anyone he butchered.
I guarantee I butchered one.
If not more.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yes, dear.
I have news. Actually, I've got updates this week.
Oh, do you now?
Yeah, at least one.
Okay.
Let me get my notes back up. They ran away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go. Last week we talked about the atheist invocation in Iowa.
Yes.
Yes. So yes. Uh-huh. He had his invocation last Wednesday.
Okay.
The day that we dropped the show.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, Justin Scott gave the invocation to Iowa State House, making it the first of its kind in that legislative body.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see what he had to say.
Okie dokie.
I do have it here somewhere.
Sound bites?
Yeah, I've got it.
Okay.
The House will be in order. The prayer today will be offered by Justin Scott, Director of the Eastern Iowa Atheists of Denver. He is the guest of Representative Brown Powers of Black Hawk County. After the prayer, the pledge will be led by Steve Balderson, the Assistant Sergeant at Arms.
First, thanks to Mrs. Utmeyer and Representative Brown Powers. Thank you to my wife and children in the back. Let me begin. Instead of closing your eyes and bowing your heads today, please keep your heads up and your eyes open to be fully alert in this moment. As you convene here in the People's House, let me implore this body to invoke the Holy Trinity of science. Made up of reason, observation, and experience, this Trinity has allowed humanity to explore the deep reaches of space, develop life-saving medicines, and vastly improve the human experience. This body should be able to tackle the many difficult issues facing the great people of the state of Iowa without allowing confirmation bias, cognitive dissonance, or intellectual dishonesty to blindly guide positions and votes. The Trinity I invoke today isn't rooted in any kind of doctrine or dogma. In its pursuit of truth, it doesn't care what our feelings are or what our deeply held beliefs are on a particular issue. Truth can sometimes be uncomfortable, but it plays a large part in the ongoing evolution of our species. There's only one catch with this kind of Trinity, though. It only works if you're willing to change your opinions on issues if it delivers an outcome that doesn't align with your deeply held beliefs. This is especially worth remembering, as all of you are entrusted to uphold and maintain the dignity and bodily autonomy of all Iowans, regardless of their worldview, sexual orientation, gender identity, or even political ideology. Refusing to accept what the evidence says has real-world implications for all Iowans. Incorporating this Trinity today, tomorrow, and every day, you do the work of the people, which will allow you to do the most good for the most Iowans. In closing, let this Trinity guide you and protect you. May this Trinity inspire you and be honest to you. May this Trinity lift up the truth upon you and give you peace. Thank you.
So that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, but the lady that was introducing her, was it just me or did she talk really weird?
Well, I think that's just the way they talk in Iowa.
She drags each of her words like she's in some overdone movie scene or something. And then the gavel or whatever.
Yeah, the gavel. I forgot the gavel.
She
happened.
Was banging that. I'm like, wow.
I thought I got past the gavel.
But his speech I thought was really good.
Yeah, I like that he talked about the holy trinity of reason, observation, and experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of science.
Right.
Yeah, that is so cool. Well, but that's not all he did that day.
Okay.
Or I should say didn't do.
Oh, okay.
He also did not participate in the pledge to show support for other atheists who do not stand for the pledge.
So he sat for it?
Well, he stood there.
Or he did stand but didn't say it.
He stood silently.
Oh, okay.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, I like the idea of standing silently.
Yeah.
Although I think when you did your invocation, we stood, or at least I stood. I said the pledge, but I totally skipped
so
the God
I was,
part.
I, on one of them, I was still mic'd.
Oh, yes, that's
so
right.
So it was very audible that I skipped the under God part.
Yeah, and you could hear for all the supporters that were there for you, the kind of quiet that went over during the God part of the pledge.
Yeah, and if you look at the video, the one I did at the State House, you can see that I skipped under God there, too.
Oh, uh-huh.
Right. Yeah, I think this is great. It's a move forward for atheists, mm-hmm. getting more of these done.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I hope to see more in other states happen.
Yeah, and eventually
it needs to be happening.
Eventually get one on the congressional floor.
Now that would be something.
On the federal level, because that's never happened.
Yeah.
They've been trying for years.
Oh, have they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yes, it is.
Anyways, moving on.
Uh-huh.
Let's go to the movies.
Okay.
Yeah. Former Hercules actor Kevin Sorbo has become the new celebrity to grace the silver screen in a slew of badly written strawman arguments known as Christian movies.
Oh, uh-huh.
He's already played the part of an atheist professor in God's Not Dead, and now he's playing a teacher in a school that has created a policy to take Under God from the pledge in an appropriately named One Nation Under God.
And this comes out...
They just started filming, literally.
Oh, okay.
Like, yesterday.
Oh, okay.
The story is basically set in what they call a magnet school in Louisiana.
Okay.
So it's not directly a high school. So it's a little weird. It's the only way they can get away with it.
Uh-huh.
And so the school policy is set up to where the kids can no longer say under God when they're saying the pledge.
Right.
Right.
Okay, so they're told not to.
They're told not
that
to.
That they cannot.
That's my understanding of the plot.
Uh-huh.
So this is what's being told to us. And it's up to one student, a new student, to defend that. And he has to convince the principal and Kevin Sorbo as the teacher why they should say under God.
Okay.
So it's the most ridiculous strawman argument they've ever come up with.
I was going to say, they've had several.
Because there's a really, really easy one.
Uh-huh.
All he has to say, it's the federal, it's mandated that under God be in the pledge, right?
Uh-huh.
You can't tell people not to say it.
Right.
That's the argument. That's all you need. That's it.
Yeah, but they pretty much do that with all the movies they make.
Well, yeah, they're pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in God's...
Their prediction of what atheists believe is just asinine.
Yeah, like in the God's Not Dead movie.
Yeah.
Kevin Sorbo, he played a quote-unquote atheist, right?
Right.
But it turns out he just hated God.
Right, which because,
makes him,
you know, all atheists just
which
hate
makes
God.
Him a misotheist, not an atheist.
That's what I mean by they don't understand.
Right, and he had a literal deathbed conversion.
Oh, of course. Of course he did, because
yeah.
they also believe
well,
that
I
that's what
say,
all us atheists do.
Spoiler, in case you haven't seen, he had a literal death road, because he got hit by a car.
Death road, okay,
yeah.
Fine. I didn't watch it.
And then, like in God's Not Dead 2, they had an equally insane plot with what
Don't look at me.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch Girl. I don't remember
her name. Oh, okay. Melissa Joan Hart.
Yeah. So she played a teacher, if I remember right, who was asked something about her religion. She told them the truth, and she got in trouble.
Oh, that was her that played that part?
Yeah. And the horrible ACLU were attacking her. It wasn't the ACLU. They named it something else. Right? But, you know, she was attacked by them because that's all they do.
Yep.
Is attack Christian teachers.
I can't sit through those. I just
No, I can't. I can't watch them. I will happily listen to god-awful movies destroy them.
Yes. Much more entertaining that way.
Yes, absolutely. It's the only way I'm going to listen to them.
I just, no. I have so much more things to do with my time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even watch bad, good movies, right?
Uh-huh.
They just frustrate me. And then I get a bad, bad movie.
On purpose.
Yeah. It's just the straw man arguments are so ridiculous.
I don't know. And they're like the only ones putting these out. Have you noticed? I mean, as far as trying to portray their opposites.
Yeah.
You know, what they think that, well, you know.
What they're putting out is, like you said, the opposite of what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, not just that. It's the opposite of them, meaning atheists. And they portray them in a way that they think that atheists are and get it dead freaking wrong.
Yeah.
It wasn't really pun intended, but it works.
I mean, yeah. If you like those kind of movies, go ahead and watch them. I don't care. I'll read the synopsis. Yes,
because they're not going to watch them if you did care.
Yeah, don't care. Don't watch them ever. In fact, don't give them money. And they'll stop making them, hopefully.
Yeah, I doubt it.
These movies make millions and millions of dollars.
And that I totally don't understand
either.
Well,
some of them make millions. Some of them make hundreds. So
yeah, either way.
Hundreds of dollars.
Don't get it.
Because they're that good.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Are we moving on now?
We can move on. I just wanted to get those out.
Okay, that's fine.
So what we're moving on to is we're skeptics.
You were just not going to mention who it was with?
Of course I was. I got it written down.
You're like, oh, yeah.
No, I had this interview a few weeks ago, and I'm finally getting around to getting everyone caught up.
Oh, uh-huh.
So I think we're out of interviews, so I'm going to have to schedule some more.
How about some more show?
Some more show. Well, I can do some more show.
Yeah. We've been doing quite a bit interviews lately.
Well, we'll see.
I think it's time for more show for a while.
Well, we'll see.
Fine.
We'll let the listeners decide. Let me know. If you want more interviews or more show? Or both, because we can handle both.
And where do you go to do that?
Where do you go?
Oh, don't look at me. I asked you the question.
Fine. It's on Twitter if you want.
You almost didn't know or what?
Well, I just decided which place to contact me.
Well, I was going to say, you got several, right?
Yeah, but we'll discuss that after the interview.
You're a pain in the butt.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with these guys. So let's roll the tape.
Okie dokie.
And welcome back to another yakking session. This week, we have the Cellar Door Skeptics with us. The Cellar Door Skeptics is a podcast based out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, featuring host Christopher Tanner and Chris Hanna. Every week, they promise to engage the audience with an hour or longer podcast. Their desire is to bring engaging, entertaining, and factually sound information for all listeners to digest. They air new episodes every Tuesday at 9 via Spreaker and iTunes. Welcome, Chris and Christopher.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Likewise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's a little bit of payback for having us on a while back.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You did come on. That's got to be probably about 6 months ago, isn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. So that was a fun episode.
Yeah, this is my revenge.
Do you get to be a little naughtier on this one? Are we allowed to swear? Is it uncut?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I allow my guests to do whatever they want, and I'll just put the E-tag on whenever somebody fucks up. So. Oh, there we go.
There we go. See?
So tell me about your show. First, how did the name Cellar Door Skeptics come about?
Well, that's actually a really funny question, because we debated this for almost a month. So a little history. Both of us came from an older YouTube show called Atheist Analysis, which is now defunct. And I kind of started out with that after I got a taste in the secular community and wanted to do more than just do research, right? So I used to do some research for Dogma Debate, and I worked, basically just putting together timelines, contacting, you know, guests when needed and different things like that. And then I decided, hey, I wanted to get more involved. So I got involved with this show called Atheist Analysis. And within a month, they kind of made me a guest host. And then after about 3 months, I kind of helped host the show and plan the show and do a lot of the stuff with Johnny Brotherton. At the time, I met Chris Hanna, who also lived in Grand Rapids, through an email from Michigan Atheist Association or something like that.
No, just a Michigan atheist. We talked. I had emailed Arlene, who was the head at the time, and she said, well, there's this other guy who's been ranting and raving on the internet, and he said he needs to meet another atheist. And so we connected that way.
And it was really weird because we ended up meeting up, and then we hung out at a festival because Grand Rapids loves their festivals. And so we hung out at this festival, and then we were like, okay, we get along. So he was a blogger and decided to come work for Atheist Analysis to blog while I did a lot of the guest planning and hosting. And then about a year and a half in, we decided we wanted to do something local. We wanted to come home and do just Grand Rapids because we both lived here. We wanted to be in the same room, and we didn't want to have to deal with all the technical difficulties YouTube provided for us. And it's kind of boring to watch a two-hour show with just two talking heads in reality. Nobody wants to see you yell at a computer for 2 hours.
Generally, that gets a little boring after a while, yeah.
Yeah. So we decided a podcast would actually be more beneficial, easier to record, and would allow us to be freer in what we wanted to do. And I don't know if that's a word or not, but that's the thing on the show. I make up words because I'm like Trump, you know, in that aspect. But we were debating on what we wanted to do, and we decided that Atheist Analysis was... That was a hard line, right? Not everybody associates as an atheist. That's a very hard line to draw.
And it kind of pigeonholes you a little bit.
I mean, it does.
You're guessed to be specifically theological almost consistently. And we went to the skeptic end because I'm an engineer. And so once I finished college and got my bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering, I started working and I started just having cravings for learning again. I got so tired of not being in the classroom, not having tests and all those demands. And so I started getting into science and podcasting or the YouTube community. And that's why I started blogging. And I eventually ran the blog for Atheist Analysis. And you know, that need to learn more. And this show offers a variety. Our show offers a variety. We talk science, politics, and just sometimes just pure rants and local politics and stuff. So it gives us a variety where we don't have a very specific niche, but I'd like to say we're pretty decent in a grouping of things as opposed to isolating on one topic.
Yeah, definitely. I've listened to some of your shows. I can't claim to have listened to all your shows because I don't think anybody has that kind of time to listen to all the podcast.
No.
You're too busy adulting.
Yeah. You have a whole life ahead of you, you know?
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, that's a lot of great background on that. Kind of interesting. Let's talk about who you guys are. I mean, who's behind the microphone? So let's start with you, Christopher, because that's the way the names go. So tell me about yourself. Do you do other activism outside your podcast? I mean, what sort of stuff do you enjoy doing?
Well, that's actually funny because so for the listeners listening, and this gets a little religious here, I grew up a Baptist. My father was a deacon. We went to a private school. And I spent a lot of time in ministry growing up. When I left the faith, you know, I was about 18. And then I kind of stayed in this like pseudo faith, whatever you want to call it, but hated the church because it was too mainstream for me. And it violated a lot of my problems that I had at the time with religion and how it basically restricted you. Well, I almost went back to religion about 5 years ago and then randomly found Seth Andrews' podcast through my wife at the time. And she said, this is the best thing that you can listen to. I listened to it, decided I was an atheist, and a week later I was debating Christians. But in between that time, the other activism that I had was for the LGBT community. And I'll be honest, I can't tell you specifically why. All I could say is that that was one of the things that was shoved down my throat as a child, that anybody that was gay, anybody that was a lesbian is wrong. Anybody that was transgender just doesn't understand what they're talking about. And these people are all crazy and have infections. And that was my upbringing. And I'm not proud of it. I had to come a long ways to where I am now. But that was the first thing that I shed when I left religion was that. That was the first thing I jumped into. So I've been actively involved in helping LGBT groups both internally and externally for over 10 years now. That's just been something I got really, really heavily involved with. I also worked with Decriminalize GR. Which is a small group that wanted to decriminalize marijuana under an ounce inside of Grand Rapids. And the reason I attached to them is because they took statistics and they actually took dollars and explained if you stop doing these things, which aren't actually preventing real crimes, you'll be able to save the city $2.5 million a year. And they did all the math and all these different things. It is because the city was attacking minorities. And when you looked at the fallout between the two, it's detrimental. And so I didn't do it because I want to walk around Grand Rapids and smoke weed, you know, because I don't even live in Grand Rapids, and nor have I ever. Not saying I don't smoke weed, but, you know, I've never lived in Grand Rapids. And what happened was I felt compassion for the minorities that had to deal with the harassment on a daily basis. So that's actually, and my mom always said, you're going to be a pastor. That's what she always told me growing up. You're going to be a pastor. And now I'm doing a podcast. Now I'm not like as popular as any pastors are, but you know, I mean,
you're not Jerry DeWitt.
I'm not Jerry DeWitt. That's true. That's very true.
None of us are Jerry DeWitt.
None of us look as good as he does, especially in a yellow thong. So
that is true.
But that's kind of where my activism led. So I did a lot of work with LGBT groups for about 10 years. And then when I officially came out as an atheist, I worked with the Grand Rapids thing, and then I now volunteer for the CFI, and I sit on their fundraising committee for the last 2 years. And so that's kind of how my activism has translated. This is, our podcast is an outlet for me to talk, because I like to talk a lot. And that's the nicest way to put it without,
really?
You know, being offensive.
Well, that is very enlightening. It's good to get to know some background behind you after listening to you yak for a bit.
That's, you know, very true.
We do yak here. What about you, Chris?
Mostly for me, it's I grew up in, I guess, a bi-religious household. So, like, I had my mother's family was pretty Orthodox Jewish. My father was Presbyterian light. And I've never really believed they were all stories, because I had contradictions from birth as far as, well, this is my and this is mine. And so I've never been a believer. I've never experienced much church, went in for a couple times, but so I never had any real drive for activism in any one of these things. I was never, I guess, given really bad information. And so I've always kind of been okay with a lot of groups. And so my upbringing hasn't really driven me to activism, but the scientific understanding in the world I've seen lacking in a lot of places. Just for me, it's really about education and helping teach people. Just a couple people, if I can teach someone thermodynamics, that's a good day in my book. If I can help out somebody learn what Murphy's Law is, just an extension of the second law of thermodynamics, and that teacups never miraculously put themselves back together, they always get broken down into smaller pieces. You know, these are really cool things that I want to educate people. So most of my activism is trying to teach people, even one person or multiple people on our show. And then my work keeps me from being able to really participate much. I'm a small business owner. I work 70, 80 hours a week. So I financially support the Foundation Beyond Belief as much as I can, just try to spread out through the variety of things that they do, because they are such a broad organization. They help a lot of areas that are in need.
Very cool. And that's an interesting background. I do like the idea that you educate people on stuff like that. I mean, I do wish more people did understand the law of thermodynamics. It would make a lot of things a lot easier, but there you go. You talked about legalization of marijuana in Grand Rapids. I happen to live in a state that did legalize marijuana as far as personal use, right? And mm-hmm. I can pretty much verify what you're saying, that by legalizing marijuana, you spend less resources trying to chase down minor drug users. So I can definitely tell from our statistics out here in Washington that things are slightly better. So kudos on you for trying to get that done. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to have to jump over Dick Snyder over here in Michigan to ever get ourselves any kind of good legislation on that. So we're still battling here.
Well, yeah. And some of the things, too, is if you look at the economic side of it, if you get a misdemeanor for pot, what does it do to you as an aspiring student? Right.
Exactly.
And the way it affects minorities, and the numbers we took weren't even including how it affects you. It was including resources of jailing people, putting them through county courts.
Yeah, that's what all the numbers came from. Like not being able to get a job because you have a police record. Like, how do you quantify the loss of revenue there? It's pretty difficult.
Yeah, because you could have been, you know, an amazing, I don't know, something. You could have been an amazing cop, right? But you can't get a job as a cop because you got busted for, you know, an ounce of weed once.
Mm-hmm. Even an ounce. That's quite, that's a decent amount. I mean, we're talking like a dime bag, a joint. Like a tiny amount, just some scratch in the bottom of your pocket.
Yeah, that's
or
true.
Shake.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous, the marijuana laws in this state, in this country, not just this state. This state's pretty decent on it. But, you know, I also like the idea of your LGBTQ activism. I do a fair bit of that myself. In fact, that's we're fighting some transgender issues out here. Oddly enough, the state of Washington has issues with a new law that's going up, or they're trying to pass, that would limit the use of bathrooms to gender of birth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does everybody run around with their birth certificates in Washington? Like, how are you figuring that out?
So
that's what I've always asked.
So, yeah, I've always wanted to know. So right now, our Constitution does gender orientation as a protected class in the state of Washington. They're trying to have that repealed. Like the dumbasses they are. It just pisses me off. It's one of the few things that'll drive me to curse in public is to run into one of those assholes. There's a whole story behind that. But yeah. So what else do you guys do outside of activism? Do you have any hobbies or anything like that? I know Chris said you run a small business, so you don't necessarily have to get into that. But what else do you guys do?
Well, I like to drink. I guess that's a good way to put it. I enjoy fancy whiskeys. I board game. I'll be honest. That's a thing that I picked up about 3 years ago. And I'll be honest, I don't know where I picked it up from, but it was just kind of one of those things. In the secular community up here in Grand Rapids, there are some people from the CFI, and they were like, oh, yeah, hey, we board game. You should come over. And I was thinking, you know, like chutes and ladders, you know, I don't know, cards like euchre. Maybe none of your listeners ever heard of euchre before. And it's not with a Y, it's with an E. But, you know, it's one of those things. So I went over there not knowing what to expect and ended up like, holy crap, this is really competitive. Oh, holy crap. You know, these are like super complex games that actually make you think. I mean, we're not talking like a 5-10 minute game. Some of these are like hour long games. So weirdly enough, to everybody in my family's disapproval at first, I dropped probably about $500 out of my taxes 1 year in board games, because they're not cheap. I mean, you're not going to get a board game for $50 unless, right, you know, that's the small price to pay. You know, they go upwards of hundreds of dollars.
Wow.
But I found the ability to connect with my family again. You know, my one son doesn't care for them as much because he's not as competitive. So, but we found games he does like, for example, King of Tokyo, King of New York. They're dice-based games. They're a lot more random chance, but they're still really fun to play. Or Camel Cup. We have this game called Camel Cup. My 8-year-old can play this game. She loves it. You race little camels and bet on them. That's probably bad for you teaching your kids how to bet, but you know, it's fun because you're able to see them connect the dots in ways that they've never done before. Huh. And I've discovered that I enjoy board games in company of people more than I do video games, which is what was my niche before. So I went through all this board game phase where I would buy a board game a month for a while. And so my wife finally said, look, we can't even play all these. You need to stop. Figure out what you're going to do, but stop, because I can't keep up with you. We can't play all these games, and we just don't, you know, you don't have enough time.
Right.
And so that's my main hobby is that, you know, I like to garden. I'll be honest. I do like to garden. I'm not very good at it, but I like to garden. But the board games were something I was able to use to connect with other family members and with my own kids and my wife in a competitive but fun way.
That's interesting. I never thought board games could be something that you could use to actually teach but how to think, right? It's an mm-hmm. interesting concept. I mean, I've played some board games, you know, like Risk, that's somewhat complicated, right? But, you know, most people hear board games, they think like Monopoly and the family destroyer. That it is.
Yeah, that's true. We don't play Monopoly in this house very often, just so you know.
Yeah,
because we do have arguments.
Yeah, we don't either, but we do own one called Alpacaopoly, which is based on alpacas. It's a very strange game.
I've never played that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We own alpacas, so it fit to our alpaca needs.
That's a very specific animal reference.
Yes, it is. But they have a Monopoly based on alpacas, so I'm like, okay, cool. We'll buy it.
Well, my basic hobbies, it's as one of my favorite things to do is just simply to be a walking contradiction. I'm about 80 to 90% deaf. I wear hearing aids, so like I like music, like heavy metal. Chris and I actually, we both love heavy metal and like really, really, he likes even heavier than I do. But I like playing guitar and messing around like that. But like I said, I'm small business. So like I'm an engineer, I'm a maker. There's a cool movement of people called makers, and they're people who are evaluating making things with your hands. So like when it's gift time for the holidays, I don't just go to the store and buy stuff. Like I make things. I made my father a knife, and like really, really high end. Like I spent a lot of time on this. I did for my wife, I make her jewelry all the time out of stainless steels and materials that are relatively easy to bend and mold. And I mean, I love making things and giving gifts. You know, you get that personal gratification of creating something, but also it's different, it's unique. And I'm not a huge fan of capitalism, so I'll keep my dollars in my pocket, and I'll try to do stuff from the heart, and like stuff that's cool, like chemical etching glass. I made flasks with people's images on them and stuff like that. But doing things is, when I have the time like that, it's probably, besides making noise, probably what I do most.
Yeah, I like that maker concept. I recently picked up coppersmithing, so I've been tinkering a bit with that. So that definitely appeals to my own maker.
My ultimate goal is to maybe one day get a 3D printer. That would be amazing. Oh,
yeah, those things are so cool. I've seen them at the place where I work has tons of 3D printers. In fact, they have them just out in the hallways. You can go and take your flash drive and have it print something for you. So, yeah.
There's some money rolling around in that place.
Yeah. I might one day tell you where I work. I don't generally talk about it much on the show.
I'm guessing that'll be after plying you with a bunch of good drinks.
Probably two would do it, because that's how much I drink.
Lightweight, Chris. We got to get him over here. We'll squeeze all the details.
So now I think we're down to the hardest question of all that I'm ever going to ask anybody. What is your favorite movie quote?
Yeah, I'll let Chris go. No, I seen him browsing. Or did you find it? You don't have yours yet?
I do, but I get torn, so I'll let you go first.
All right. Well, this is not a question. I mean, I didn't even have to look at any other. I can't remember the entire thing offhand, but probably one of my favorite movies of all time, probably the most influential movie of my entire life, is the movie Ghost in the Shell.
Okay.
I love the original manga, but the movie was a life-changing experience for me. If anybody's not familiar with it, it's anime. And there's a super hacker who is a sentient artificial intelligence, so essentially becomes self-aware. And he says in the movie, it can be argued that DNA is nothing more than a program designed to preserve itself. Life has become more complex in an overwhelming sea of information. And life, when organized into species, relies on genes to be its memory system. So man is an individual only because of his intangible memory, and memory cannot be defined, but it defines mankind. The advent of computers and the subsequent accumulation of incalculable data has given rise to a new system of memory, and through thought parallel to your own, humanity has underestimated the consequences of computerization.
And that is a hell of a quote.
Yeah, it's a beast, yeah. But I have a t-shirt that says it. And
it must have been a big t-shirt.
Well, it's like one of those things that you have to get right up into someone's business to read. And then they usually feel weird because that's your personal space.
He does that on purpose, though, because he wants people to get close to him.
Yeah. Obviously. Yeah, Ghost in the Machine. I think I saw that. I've seen a lot of movies. Ghost in the Shell. Yeah, sorry. Ghost in the Shell. I may have seen that. I'll have to check it out again because it. Based on that quote, it sounds really awesome.
There's a new live action with Scarlett Johansson coming out, I believe, this summer. I know. It's just for people who anime.
I might just wait for that. I mean, I like anime because I grew up on like Robotech and.
There we go.
So I grew up on the original stuff.
Akira.
Yeah, Akira. Akira is one of my favorite. Yeah. Akira is one of my favorite animes. I've seen some weird ones out there too. So. All right, Christopher.
So am I allowed to violate the rules and give you two? Is that acceptable?
That just gives me more insight into who you are.
All right. So if we want to talk about the most epic of all things, like the one movie that has resonated with me, and I have a slight story that kind of goes with it too.
Of course.
Because I like to talk. But you know, for me, Monty Python and the Holy Grail is the ultimate movie. And just personally. And it, back in the day, it wasn't because I understood the politics of it. Now I'm older, can actually understand the politics of it. But my favorite scene of the whole, of really the whole movie is when they cross the bridge, right? Right. And they talk about, you know, how they get across the bridge and they have the questions and the random people fall out. And then all of a sudden at the very end, they get across the bridge and they all get arrested.
Right.
But that whole movie is extremely political, and I never realized that growing up. So I can't give you just one quote out of that whole movie because it would ruin it. You have the whole movie fits together,
right?
And the funny thing is you know, so I've been with my wife for 10 years now, almost 10 years technically, and 10 years in July, and so we've been together for a long time. Her father, it was funny, the year before he passed, we went to an actual live production from a high school of Monty Python Holy Grail. And then he confessed to me about how he loves this movie. Like, this is his favorite movie of all times. And for about a month, month and a half before he passed, we actually would make random Monty Python jokes to each other all the time. And for me, that just solidified that movie because I grew up watching it. My dad didn't like it, but my cousins did. And now it's funny because I'm on the left side. You know, I'm very liberal leaning, very socialist, you know, whereas all my cousins are ultra conservative, you know, Christians still. But we still can share this common bond in the love of making fun of society and different societal norms. But if we have to talk about my ultimate favorite thing, it's Batman. And I'll just nerd out for a second. Batman is my ultimate favorite. I understand, yes, I'm a white male. I can associate with this a little easier. I get that. But for me, Batman exemplifies more than just race. What it does is it shows somebody that no matter who you are, how much money you have, all he wants to do is make things fair and just for everybody. And he has to fight himself internally. And my favorite movie of all time, outside of Monty Python, is The Dark Knight with the Joker played by Heath Ledger.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the better ones.
And this is what the Joker says. He says, You just couldn't let me go, could you? This is what happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object. You are truly incorruptible, aren't you? Huh? You won't kill me out of the some misplaced sense of self-righteousness. And I won't kill you because you're just too much fun. I think you and I are destined to do this forever. And for anybody who knows the Batman series and the Joker series, they understand the overarching archetypes here, right? Between the ultimate good versus the ultimate bad. And when I became an atheist and I looked at the different morality sides of things, and morality is a favorite topic of mine to talk about. But when we talk about morality here, Batman exemplifies everything that is all of us in some aspects, right? Because he's not perfect. He's not godlike. He makes mistakes. And yet you have somebody that just doesn't give a flying fuck holding him to the fire saying, hey, look, motherfucker, you're just as bad as me, just in a different level. And so for me, the whole Batman-Joker dynamic exemplifies pretty much my whole life, because as much as I try and do good, as much as I want to fight evil, as much as I want to push my social justice movements forward, I have to remember that I'm still part of the bad people. I'm still part of the corruption in some aspects, and that my whole life should be spent trying to figure out how I can do better. But at least I can do something. And that's what I always encourage other people to do. Do as best and as much good as you can, because in the end, even all the good that you do will offset some of that bad. And at some point we'll be able to, you know, turn the tables and hopefully have more equality for everyone.
Damn, you just dropped some serious Batman philosophy on me there.
Yeah, sorry. That's like I get to nerd out because it's not my podcast, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, that was definitely seriously enlightening. I hadn't thought about Batman in quite that way.
And yeah, a lot of people don't, I guess, you know, and I get that because, you know, again, I'm a comic book nerd. I like comic books a lot. I mean, we could have a whole podcast just on comic books if you want it, but I don't know. I probably wouldn't be the best person, but I like the moral discussions behind it a lot because I don't know. Now I think I'm rambling here, but one of the things that I enjoy debating with Christians is morality, because I take a different perspective than a lot of atheists and secular people do. I believe in objective morality, not absolute, but I do believe in objective morality. I just don't believe objective morality comes from the same place Christians do.
And that may be a topic for a different show.
Haha, see, look, I led you back into having us back on again.
Oh, damn it. That was evil.
See, I told you I'm a little bit Joker, a little bit Batman.
All right, so if people want to get a hold of you or find your show, how would they do that?
The best place, honestly, the best place to find us is probably on Spreaker. But we prefer you go to iTunes and subscribe because then you get automatic downloads. If you go and subscribe to both Spreaker and iTunes, you get emails when we go live, which we do, let's just say 80% of the time we do a live show every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Otherwise, when we do release a show, it releases at 9 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays and you can get it in your iTunes feed. That's probably the best place to hear the podcast. If you want to get a hold of us, the best place is either through Facebook or Twitter. And our Twitter is at CellarDoorSkept. And our Facebook is, I think, /CellarDoorSkeptics.
Yep.
Or you can send us an email if you want to contact us through slowmail at CellarDoorSkeptics@gmail.com.
Cool. Well, I'll put all those links in the show notes and make sure our listeners can find you. This has been an enlightening conversation. I've got to say that. I've actually enjoyed this yakking. So that's really cool.
Well, thank you. And again, thank you very much for having us on. We enjoyed talking to you, too.
Oh, absolutely.
It was awesome.
So, yeah, that was a lot of good fun. I really enjoyed those guys.
Yeah, I wasn't with that one.
No, but we were on their show. I think we mentioned that during the show that we were on their show last year.
Oh, uh-huh.
And, you know, this was revenge.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. We'll probably have them on again. I think we set something. We set up like a sequel ending.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
So, we'll probably have them on again sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's...
all the yakking we have for this week. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
That's good for me.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Next week.
We always like to hear your feedback, so leave us a voicemail at 704-802-YAK or an email at podcast@secularyakking.com.
More input.
All comments are welcome. We like to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. You also can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google+.
If you like our show, head over to your podcast directory of choice and leave us a 5-star review. If you really like the show, support the show on our Patreon page.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
And we'll be back next week with more yakking to please your eardrums.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.